Episode 81, Navigating the Future of Legal Tech with Filevine's Emily Lippincott. Our next guest is Emily Lippincott. She is a legal futurist at Filevine, the leading legal work platform for law firms and businesses across the United States and Canada. Emily designed solutions to bring Filevine and its suite of products to clients in a variety of legal disciplines. She's an attorney with over 16 years of experience in Silicon Valley, both in-house and at law firms, counseling corporate clients from incorporation to public offering or acquisition. Emily is skilled in the law, knowledge management, and technology. This allows her a unique perspective on the future of legal tech. Enjoy. Have you been enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast? Consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast feeds. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
I appreciate you being here. And to get things started, please tell us what your current tech setup is.
Yeah, I just upgraded. So let's talk about it. Thank you. Yeah, going to be doing some podcasting next year with my team here at Filevine. So we've upgraded. I'll just kind of start top to bottom, right?
Sure.
On the top of my Dell curved monitor here. Yeah, I've got a Logitech stream cam and then kind of a influencer light. I think they now call them streaming lights. That's a Logitech Litra Glow. So
Okay. Obviously
your listeners won't be able to see what I look like, but you can see what I look like. And hopefully it's an improvement.
you look great. So I'm sure you look great all the time. And nice, I see you have a virtual background, I'm presuming. I'm assuming that's not your actual office wall with the Filevine logo on the top and then the symbol to the right.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we use virtual backgrounds here. My office wall is a boring white wall. So you get a little bit of color. We call it File Pine, actually. We've
Fair
named
enough.
Our own sort of like evergreen color for the listeners to get a sense for what it looks like. So yeah, so that's kind of like top of the monitor. Like I said, I've got a Dell curved monitor that's sitting on. And then as far as kind of audio goes, I've got an Audio-Technica AT2020PK, which they call their sort of streaming podcasting packs. So that includes a really nice mic and then the headphones that I'm wearing here. Those are running through a Scarlett Solo box so that I can adjust the input and output on that. All of that is plugged into my MacBook Pro with that M1 chip that people have been talking about running Sonoma. Love to keep my updates going, right? The security team will be happy to hear that. And then for the tech note-taking, so that's kind of my standard setup. I'm a recovering lawyer, so thanks for still having me on the podcast.
We interview not just lawyers and judges. We interview people, anyone who's involved with technology and the law. So you don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to be a recovering lawyer. You don't have to be in between. And I've interviewed law students. I've interviewed paralegals. I've interviewed a lot of non-lawyers. So don't let that scare you at all.
Perfect. Yeah. So I'm still old school in some senses that I take notes kind of in a notebook, but I'm slowly transitioning to an iPad Air with an Apple Pencil to do sort of the in the cloud virtual sort of note taking. So yeah, that's kind of my everyday tech stack.
So wait, one question and then one thought to share. So for your note-taking on your iPad, what program are you using?
I'd use GoodNotes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah,
and that's the one I was going to recommend that you take a look at. Yep. Very good. They've got great handwriting and the syncing capabilities is just fantastic.
Yeah. And I have terrible handwriting. And so the fact that it can still read most of the words without giving me that little kind of, hey, is this actually a word, underline on there is pretty great. So highly recommend GoodNotes. Yeah.
So I got to ask you, I have horrible handwriting too. And so I hate handwrite because it's like, I can't even read my own handwriting. And I'm just naturally wanting to type. So how are you handling, I guess maybe the draw to just rather type something than using handwritten notes, even with your iPad?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because it's something that I run into. The one thing is sort of pushing through that desire to just go back to what I already know, because there is so much value in using a tool like that, right?
Right.
The other thing is, and this is more of a practical tip, on the Apple Pencil 1, which is what my iPad 10, I have like little rubber tips that I put on it that makes it seem more like the actual writing experience, because they improve that with the Pencil 2, which I have kind of for personal use. And so, yeah, I think getting used to the discomfort, kind of pushing through it a little bit, understanding the value that can come from doing that, and then just getting those rubber tips was really helpful.
I take it they're not the Apple rubber tips. They're something else?
Correct. Yeah. I got mine on Amazon, a pack of like 20 for $5 or something. So
was there something special about these rubber tips, say, versus what Apple provides?
They were cheaper and they were recommended by somebody who already uses them. And so I borrowed it's essentially just a cap that sits on top of the existing tip that comes with the pencil.
Okay.
Yeah. And so if they wear out, you just pull out the next one. They're different colors if that's your thing, right? So yeah.
Do you know who makes them?
I don't actually. I could look up and send that.
Please.
Info
to you. Yeah, I'll be sure to put that in the show notes.
Yeah, perfect.
You know, talking about liking to be up to date on the software with Sonoa and all that, I would encourage you to check out a program called Mac Updater.
Okay.
And what it does is it runs in the background and it's constantly checking all of your different programs so that when new versions come up, it lets you know immediately. Sometimes it's like you don't open a program for a while, but then when you open it, it's like, oh, there's an upgrade that I need to do or an update I need to do.
Yeah.
And like I'm wasting 5 minutes just doing that when I really just want to get to work or get to whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is constantly running in the background. So like in the morning when I sit down at the desk, you know, the computer's on, I see that like there's either 1, 2, 12 updates that need to be done. And I just take care of that real quick. And, you know, I'm good to go for the rest of the day. And even during the day, I'll get updates.
That's a great tip. Is it something where like you have to go in and say, okay, run these? It just identifies them or does it also run them for you?
It runs automatically. So it runs on your menu bar. It's running in the background.
Okay.
And you can set how you want it delivered to you. That's been fantastic. And I use that all the time.
I will definitely check that out.
But let's get into the questions. What are the top three factors you think a lawyer should consider when vetting new hardware for their practice so that they are not only cutting edge, but future proof?
I love this question because I think when I was in the full-time practice of law, a lot of this was sort of driven by just asking colleagues. But now I'm in a role where I'm sort of paid to keep an eye on the technology that's coming, mm-hmm. but also work for a company that sells technology to lawyers. I'm seeing more and more kind of the things that are out there. So my sort of overarching thing, which is the first point, is I think of it, whatever tech you use, as like exercise. Pick the thing that you're actually going to use every day, not just what people tell you to use, right?
Right.
And so I think, like we were talking earlier with that comfort zone and technology, right? You got to be willing to kind of push through a little bit of discomfort. Mm-hmm. And for lawyers, I think we spend most of our days in that discomfort zone because we're dealing with novel issues or, you know, clients that are in tricky situations. And so we're familiar with that, but sometimes we're not willing to use, you know, get used to that for tech as well. And so pick the tech that meets the need that you have, but that you will actually also use, because I see it every day kind of in the work that I do. People buy a program because everybody in their particular practice area uses that program and they're like, oh, I'm paying for it, but I've never opened it. Right. And so do your research, figure out what the tools are, and then pick the one that you're actually going to use, whether it's the pretty one that you like to look at or the one that works on the phone that you have or whatever your criteria are. That would be kind of the first point, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Second,
compatibility. I think more and more with AI coming out, pick things that integrates with what you already have.
Okay.
Right? So if you have, you know, I've been doing a lot of work in the immigration space lately, and I know you understand this because you work in the Veterans Affairs space. You know, dealing with the government, some of their tech is really old, and we're all sort of just beholden to the new tech trying to fit in with the old tech to make the process smoother. And there's improvements coming. You know, I don't want to obviously bag on the government necessarily, but pick something that works with your existing tech stack and is compatible in a seamless way would be kind of the second point.
Just to pull on that for a second. So as you mentioned, I do veterans benefits appeals before the Department of Veterans Affairs. And it drives me nuts. The Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is an Article I court, and they're not part of the federal court system in the sense of I forget what the electronic filing is actually called there. But the problem is that the CABC uses JavaScript for their filing, and that doesn't play nice on Mac.
Right.
And I mean, it doesn't really play nice on Windows, but it's mostly a Windows thing. And for years, they're like, oh, we support the Mac too. And like, it's not working. And I'm working with them to get it to fix. And like, I got a template here. And of course, you're like freaking out because you want things filed on time. And then the last time I contacted them, it seemed like every time I contacted them, I was one step ahead of them. Like their old instructions weren't working anymore. And like they had to update it. And the last time I contacted them, I was like, it's not working at all. They completely removed support for Mac after my last complaint.
Oh, no.
It's like, and I had to, I ended up getting a Windows machine for the blog. And so I use that to sometimes file stuff for work. But you shouldn't have to buy two different systems.
Agreed, especially with the technology that we have today. Yep, exactly. And we're running into that on the immigration side. FileVine launched a tool called Immigration A. And there's some forms that are currently sort of fillable and fileable online with USCIS. But we're sort of waiting to see if they're going to improve that experience, because everyone we've talked to who uses it is like, yeah, it's slightly better than filling out a manual PDF and mailing it off. But like, it times out on you, you know, all these things.
Right.
And so it's a little bit like, as people who are in the practice of law and the business of law, sometimes you want to fix things, but you're sort of, you know, your hands are tied until whatever it is that you're communicating with actually gets up to speed as well. Could again, probably, preaching to the choir. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You and I could probably lament on this for too long, but well, let's move into your third answer.
Yeah. Security, right?
Okay.
I think, yeah, lawyers, given the nature of the information that we deal with and the clients that we deal with, security needs to be number one. And I think with, as the technology gets smarter and smarter, biometrics, multi-factor authentication, all of that stuff is really important to make sure that your tool has the latest and greatest on that. And it's not like seven hoops to get that security. It's a simple thing like a two-factor authentication or an encryption biometric. I love using my face to open my phone, right? You know, those kinds of things. Because I think lawyers in particular are, you know, hackers are interested in what we've got, right? So it's, I'm not saying we're the number one target out there, right? But like lawyers should be especially careful.
So do you know what's going on with passkeys? I know that was supposed to be like the next step, the next evolution from two-factor authentication and biometrics.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the latest is on it as far as what's out there. I have been getting kind of notices from different providers that I used to say like, hey, would you rather use a passkey for this? Mm-hmm. Now I happen to use kind of a password manager, right?
Would you use a mask?
I use 1Password.
Which is what I use, and I like it a lot. And they were talking about going over to passkeys, but either I'm missing something or I just haven't seen that next step actually taken.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe we're not on high enough on the list to be in the beta. Maybe they're testing it out with some customers now. But
it was my understanding it was supposed to be released. And so that's why I'm a little confused on things.
Yeah.
So it's funny you say that because like I was at a conference several months ago. And there was a CLE that was being done. I think it was about security in the office. And the speaker asked a room full of lawyers, say about 400 lawyers, about right now, how many of you are doing work here? And of course, everyone's raising their hands. And how many of you are using the hotel Wi-Fi and the conference room Wi-Fi? And everyone's raising their hands. And then like they asked, well, how many people here are using a VPN? Four of us. I mean, which is just nuts.
Yeah.
You've got to have the password and a unique password for all the different sites that you log into. But quite frankly, when you're on public Wi-Fi, you need to have that VPN, that virtual private network, to make sure that everything that's going back and forth is secure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one both for work and for my personal items at home. So Google, as part of the Google One program, offers a free VPN, which is amazing. Here at the office, we use Zscaler. And so I 100% agree. A little bit shocked that it was only 4 people. That sort of said that, but yeah.
So was I. I was like, I mean, you guys are nuts because with veterans, you're dealing with the adverse, you're doing social security, medical information. I'm like, you're crazy. And same thing also is some people don't have passwords on their laptops.
Right.
Which is just nuts. Although, I mean, think about it. 10 to 15 years ago, when you took your laptop to a coffee shop, and you say had to use the restroom. Mm-hmm. You took that laptop with you into the restroom.
Right.
Nowadays, I see people leave their screen up and unlocked. I'm like, that is just incredibly stupid. But in your answer back regarding your tech setup, what phone are you using?
I'm using an iPhone 13.
Okay. And do you have like the AirPods or do you have any specific Bluetooth headphones for that?
I use AirPods kind of for my personal life, I guess. For work, I've got some Sony noise canceling headphones that I use.
Okay.
As well,
so. Okay. Are those cans or are they in the ear?
They are. Yeah. The Sony ones are the over the ear. I find that a little bit more comfortable just for my own use. And then the AirPods are great for when you're doing a quick call while walking to lunch or at the gym or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's move into our second question. What are the top three things lawyers are still getting wrong with their hardware, software, technology use in their practice of law?
So the first one that sort of popped into my mind was this resistance to change. It's a little bit of a theme that we've talked about, right? Getting uncomfortable or dealing with the discomfort of changing a process. But I think resistance to change is a strong feeling amongst lawyers, right? And I put myself, like I said, in that category in different phases of my career, but clients are demanding this. When I was still practicing, we had clients come in and say, why am I being charged for handwritten markups and PDF charges and things like that? You know, the time that you're taking to do that when we have a tool and whatever that tool is that does the same thing with more efficiently, right? And so lawyers are often driven by client demands, right? So that resistance to change, it's a tricky one. I get it. There's typically emotions involved and things like that. But when you're thinking about that, be open to what's out there, but do your due diligence.
Can you like scale a lawyer's resistance to change based on whether or not they're using WordPerfect still?
Absolutely. As somebody who used WordPerfect when I first started my career, right? And a Lotus Notes database, if you can believe that. I might be dating myself there a little bit. But
you know, yeah. Hold on. I'm sorry. I don't think, with all due respect, I don't think you're that old.
Yeah.
It's always amazing coming across an attorney who's resistant to going to Microsoft Word because they're using a 10-year-old version of WordPerfect because of whatever workflows they have built into it. They're afraid they're not going to be able to bring with them to today.
Yeah. And I mean, talking about like the whole end of life experience, a lot of that software, WordPerfect, I don't think is an example of this, but a lot of things that lawyers are using, they're paying insane amounts of money to keep the old software kind of running, right? When it's like, hey, not only could I save you costs, but I can save you time and you can actually work and deal with more clients on a daily basis, right? So that's always kind of the conversation.
Now, can I ask, are you using Microsoft Word or using Apple Pages?
So we're a Microsoft shop. I also use Google Docs and the kind of G Suite as well. And so we use both of those. I do have Pages because I'm on a Mac, but it's pretty rare. It usually comes from a customer that's sending it to us in that format.
Gotcha. So,
okay, scalability. I think lawyers who are out there looking for some sort of tech solution to a problem that they're dealing with tend to look at what's available to them right now and solves that problem for them right now. We are in the business of selling. That's great. It meets your current needs, but let's think about how those needs are going to change over time. Maybe you add practice areas to what you do, or you increase the volume of clients that you work with. That tool may work really well with your current situation, but if any of those things change, you've got to have the ability to grow with those changes without having to go back and either get the pro license or whatever. And I get it. Lawyers are cost conscious, right? A lot of people, it's not just lawyers, but since those are who I deal with every day, they're very cost conscious. And so they're often saying, well, just give me the minimum of what I need and then I'll come back to you if I need to. And we do that, right? But a lot of times they come back to us much sooner than they realize, right? To get those upgrades, right? Like, hey, I do need that, right? And so there's sometimes cost savings to be had when you buy the kind of future looking one and then grow into it, right? You kind of lock in those prices now versus 6 months from now, that cost may have gone up, right? Depending on the technology. AI is a great example, right? Like what and how people are paying for AI is changing on a daily basis, right?
Yes.
Because the tools are changing.
Now with FileVine, is it a subscription or is it a one-time purchase?
It's a per user per month type of model. Yeah. So.
And then if you go from monthly to annually, will you get like a discount or if the number of people you like, if you have a group of 5 versus 100 versus 1,000, you get sort of like a discount.
You do, yeah, for kind of more users. Yeah.
Pardon the interruption. I hope you're enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast as much as I enjoy making them. Consider buying us a cup of coffee or two to help defray some of the production costs. Thanks and enjoy.
Are you still finding people resistant to the subscription as a service or software as a service?
It does come up, not as much as it has in the past couple of years, because I think a lot of software is being sold that way now.
Yes.
Especially as law firms in particular are getting comfortable with working in the cloud versus the old on-prem model, right? So yeah, there's every once in a while, there's people who are like, is this really how it works? And you're like, yeah, it is. But yeah.
Well, actually, you're leading me to another question that we're going to get to in a second, but I think a lot of people were resistant to paying a monthly fee for software versus the old days of where you bought, say, Microsoft Word for $100 versus today where you go online and you spend, 10, $20 a month for Microsoft 365. But so I'm going to ask you, and I say this not like in a confrontational way, but convince me who I use another program, a competitor of yours, and it's not cloud-based in the sense that your office is in the cloud, all my data on my computer, and I do use them to sync to other computers. So I've got a couple computers that have my complete, office on it. And of course, I have backups through like Backblaze and Dropbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So help me understand as that kind of user why I want to go to have my whole office housed in the cloud.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm going to think about this question because it's not something that's come up before and I'm not in sales. So I'm sure they're probably kicking themselves saying like, oh, we can answer this. But I think infrastructure wise, having everything on the cloud, you're going to get the benefit of the changes much faster. The reason that we sync those things for you and have you kind of store them in the system is to give you that ability to log in from your phone or your computer, right? Sometimes those syncs don't work well, right? Yeah, I can see the look of your face. You maybe had that once or twice.
One of my biggest fears is not having internet access, whether
the internet's just simply down. God forbid there's a storm or like you're on that air flight and you find out, oh yeah, it's an 8-hour flight, but guess what? Our Wi-Fi is not working.
Right.
Or, didn't we tell you that we're going to be in this international zone that does not allow for internet communications?
Or your VPN doesn't give you access in a certain country because it's blocked for important reasons. Yeah.
Well, now, hold on. If you have a good VPN, you should be able to fake where you're actually coming.
That's true. That's true. Don't let our IT department hear you say that.
Sorry. No, because like I do use ExpressVPN, not for the purpose of, say, being able to watch TV channels from Britain. That may get certain shows that are not being shown here on whatever, like Netflix versus Amazon. And I want to catch up on Friends and just do a splurge of that, binge watching of that, because they're getting it. We're not. But you can also do that for like what you were referring to, too.
Yeah, that's right. And we do offer offline editing, right? It would sort of take, and using that airplane example or that country example, it would sort of, you know, have you having the forethought to say, okay, I'm going to work on these client matters on that 8-hour flight and then down those things.
It's the forethought.
Yeah, exactly.
That freaks me out. And like I had a brief due and something happened and whatever reason, I couldn't access it. I mean, I had a copy, but apparently there was an updated copy I needed to use. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you know, it was nail biting for 8 hours where I was flying. I think I was flying to Italy.
Oh, goodness. It is a great country, but
yeah. I was like, oh, Lord, this is going to be. But anyway.
But when it comes to kind of the syncing, one of the problems that does help solve that people give us feedback that they enjoy about how our product works is when you've got the offline and the online, right, your version control becomes even more hairy than it typically is, right? Especially if you restart your computer and as sometimes happens, it wipes things and then you can recover them and you bring them back and it's like doesn't add the additional time stamp to it. So you're not sure which version 2 on your desktop now was the one that was the most recent and requires extra due diligence to open and look and things like that. So allowing those things to all happen in the system and working in the system helps solve the hairiness of that kind of version control problem. So that's one of the reasons people like to go with us is version control is, as a corporate lawyer, just one of those like necessary evils. And we have many ways in our tool to solve that, right? But yeah, that kind of stuff used to keep me up at night, especially when I was doing like large M&A deals, right? Whichever version of the disclosure schedule you're working on matters, right? So yeah.
So give us a third answer.
Yeah. So the third answer would be integration, right? So we talked about compatibility before. That's more of a kind of big picture. Are you ready for the future kind of thing? Integration is, do your important systems actually talk and sync data between each other, right? Lawyers in particular tend to buy the exact tool for the exact problem that they have, and it works great for that one thing, but then it might create problems by not talking to kind of the other tools that they use. And so one of the core design tenets of Filevine is actually kind of your all-in-one start-to-finish legal tech platform. And so there's efficiencies to be saved by having it all under kind of one umbrella. And so you got to make sure that whatever you do buy integrates well with what you already have, so that you're not wasting, I can't remember what the exact number is, but it's like 5.3 seconds every time you click out of whatever it is that you're doing to get into the next thing, right? So, and that adds up over time, right? Especially for lawyers who bill.
So what do you think about third-party integration?
We're fans of it. I mean, there's definitely, we always like to say we have an add-in, for example, with Microsoft Outlook, right?
Okay.
We're not going to reinvent email, right? It just makes no sense whatsoever for us to spend time doing that. And so we integrate with them kind of through that tool. We have a lot of really great implementation partners that also do those integrations for practice-specific or firm-specific needs that they might have. We've got an open API, so we welcome those kinds of things. But I would not recommend, unless you have a background in coding or something, taking it on yourself, sort of a DIY approach. Unless you're really willing to take time and be patient, right? Which some attorneys are, right? But
And also be willing to accept some potential sacrifices if there's mistakes.
Exactly.
Well, then I have to ask, what are your top three favorite add-ons?
Ooh, in my work?
Well, if you go personal, if you want. If you want, I'll give you, since this was not a prepared question.
Sure. Yeah, I love the non-prepared ones as well. So keep them coming. So I have an app through my credit card. This is a personal question just because it popped into my head.
Sure.
That when I'm shopping online, lets me know if there's a different site that has it for cheaper.
Oh,
right?
And what app is that?
Capital One has it. So that's the one that I have it set up for. My Amex has it as well. So yeah, super helpful, especially during holiday shopping season. To know if you're still really getting that good Black Friday pricing or if somebody else has it better.
Have you looked at Camel?
No.
Look at Camel.
Okay.
All right, three camels. And what they do is they monitor prices for products on Amazon.
Okay.
So and it will also integrate into your web browser so that when you're on Amazon, it's like, oh, well, this is the trends. This is where you might find something a little bit cheaper, maybe even a different time.
Okay, perfect. I'll definitely check that out. Speaking of sort of web browser add-ins, I prefer the 1Password add-in when I'm using my laptop, right, as opposed to my phone. Really seamless how that just pops up and lets you kind of select.
Well, 1Password will also work on your iPhone.
Yeah, but it's through like an app versus a web browser plugin. So
I don't know if it's the version that you're using, but I'm on 15 and I'm pretty sure 14 did, where the app did integrate into Apple's passwords so that you can add the password directly.
Gotcha.
And so
yeah.
I don't know if it's a version issue. You said you had 13.
Yeah. Well, so it does prompt me like when I'm in a web page and you click into it, the little passwords icon opens up, but then I guess in my mind, I'm thinking what it's actually opening is that the 1Password app that's sitting on my phone behind the scenes. But if I'm mis-explaining that, then obviously, but yeah, it's super seamless, right? So that's good. I'm trying to think what else I use for add-ins kind of on a daily basis. Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, we use the Word and Outlook plugin internally at Filevine on a pretty regular basis. So yeah, those are kind of the three I can think of.
Are there any other email readers that Filevine uses besides Outlook?
Gmail.
And which of the two do you prefer, Outlook versus Gmail?
I prefer Gmail, but I've used probably Outlook more often because most of the firms that I tended to work for, even in-house, they tend to be sort of Microsoft shops. But if you said to me, starting today, you can only use one or the other for the foreseeable future, I would pick Gmail.
And why is that?
I think the user interface is a little bit cleaner for me. I've gotten really good at using labels and kind of filters and things. So I found that process to be a little bit more arduous in Outlook. So that's just a preference thing.
Now, wait. So that was all right. So that was number three. So we're going to go into our third question. What are the top three ways lawyers can use AI in their practice?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is document review. And this is close to my own heart. It was actually the first experience I had with AI as a practicing lawyer. I was at a firm that used an AI tool for document review in M&A transactions. So it would do kind of that first pass red flag type review. And so that was, again, maybe I'm going to date myself 5 years ago, right, when we were using that tool. And so it was a little bit of a learning curve up front. Yeah, discomfort we've talked about a couple of times. But once we started to use it and really just kind of iterate on it, it was amazing. And then now jump to kind of this last year where I think the tools have just 100,000x'd what they were given some of the developments. And so it's something that we have here at Filevine. But this idea of a first pass based on what it's learned and what it knows that you are interested in learning about, meaning I want to know if it has this kind of clause. And most corporate lawyers or commercial contracts lawyers can say, here's the five things everyone wants to know about. But every customer kind of has another two or three or four of those things that you can train the model to look for. And it saves that time, right? And it's, as my coworker was saying the other day, AI is so much better at recall than the human brain is. And so it's actually better at that kind of first pass review than a tired lawyer who's on hour 11 of a long billable hour day. I think that's a great use case for, and I'm obviously using the lens of my background thinking about document review in a contracts kind of setting, but same is true for depositions and anything that litigators and forms like you all work with Veterans Affairs, like it's all the same answer.
So one of the things that we've been hearing a lot about in the news is AI hallucinate that, to be blunt, a couple of attorneys written briefs just using AI and not checking their citations and getting called out, which in my mind, it's, well, if you're going to use AI to write your brief and you don't check your citations, it's kind of like letting your law clerk write your brief and not checking the citation. So putting that aside, how is the user going to be able to comfortably rely on the AI that's built into the CRMs and the LPMs for lawyers? Why should they go, well, what if they just make it up?
Yeah. And I think that's a great question that everyone should ask whatever provider that they're using that has these AI features. Mm-hmm. Speaking specifically of Filevine, we actually work on all of the prompts, sometimes for many months behind the scenes, and then offer them up so that we have control over the hallucinations, the answers that are given, you know, where you were kind of heading, I think, with that comment about the lawyer who unfortunately has become the example of what not to do, right? Is we've designed it so that you can't ask it to practice law. Right? You can't say, here are the facts of the case, summarize them for me. What should I do next? Right? Our tool we have designed specifically to not allow you to ask for that. And so I think think it's a conversation that should be had with every provider to know how are they generally designing, right? If they're anything like us, there's secret sauce we won't tell you about, but we'll give you those answers so you have that comfort, right? Yeah. And so people who are using free tools or using maybe the $20 version of ChatGPT, it's harder to answer that question, right? Those guardrails aren't necessarily in those. Right. And so I just always caution people, you know, I'm not saying don't use the $20 version. It does a lot of amazing things, but you just don't necessarily have the same comfort that you have working with a provider who's done that thought work for you.
Gotcha. So while we're kind of alluding to ChatGPT and all of the problems that, I mean, there's some benefits that come with it clearly, but also there's some problems. How is FileVine making sure that the data that it's accessing through for its AI is secure?
Yeah. So we only use models that we pay for. We use different models depending on what the task is. So I think especially in the legal space, there aren't a lot of tools out there specifically that were trained on legal documents, and it is its own kind of unique language, right? And so we pick the best tool out there for the job that it's doing. Some are really good at gathering numbers and data out of documents. Other are better at kind of that more generative response kind of stuff. And then FileVine itself is SOC 2 Type 2 compliant. You know, we have many layers of security and amazing security team here. So it sits under that umbrella. And then we pay for those kind of private models and things to add that extra layer of security.
And is one user's data sandboxed from another user's data? From another user's data?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
No overlap whatsoever.
Cool.
It's like we don't mix funds in the law, right? We don't mix data here at FileVine.
So it's basically you have your own trust account for every client.
Right. For their data, for the AI.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Perfect. All right. So number two,
legal research. And as someone who, again, came up through the law, legal research is sort of how you cut your teeth and learn how to ask those questions, right? So I'm not here to say that your first year associates are going to get no training whatsoever, but they're already looking at it now for the research that they're doing in law school, right? But this idea of the amount of volume and information that an AI tool can sort of suss down to get you to that one thread that you actually need to research, what is the law on this? Mm-hmm. I think that's going to add incredible efficiencies in the future.
I have some disheartening news to share with you, my friend.
Let's hear it.
Did you know that they no longer teach book shepherdization?
No, I didn't. Yeah. Really?
They don't do that anymore.
Oh, man. Now we're dating ourselves.
I know. It's like, when I heard that, I was, you know, P-I-S-E-E-D for sure.
Yeah. Wow.
And for your third answer.
For the manual administrative tasks that we all kind of have to deal with every day. I think most people, when they think of AI, that's what they go to, right? Like, can AI manage my calendar for me? Can it alert me in ways that are more helpful than just constant calendar pop-ups and things like that? That's where we're seeing the sort of gateway use for AI in the customers that we deal with now. They're like, oh yeah, I use it for this and it's been really great, right? And then we say, did you know it can also do this and this and this, right? And so I don't foresee a world where robots will manage our entire schedules and communications and all of that stuff, right? I think especially in the law, the human relationship element is key with our clients. But there's so many things that you can do with AI that, you know, take that manual sort of drudgery that we all deal with on a daily basis and really kind of make it more efficient.
Excellent. Excellent. Emily, I want to thank you for being here today. Where can people find you?
LinkedIn. Yeah, you can just find me at Emily Lippincott at LinkedIn. So it's pretty easy.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'll be sure to have your information in our show notes and anything else that you want to share and what we talked about today. And thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast. Our next episode will be posted in about 2 weeks. If you have any ideas about a future episode, please contact me at MichaelDJ@thetechsavvylawyer.page. Have a great day and happy lawyering.